So first of all, let's spoil. The answer is yes, we can do multi-party computation of you can compute everything in the encrypted domain. The question is how efficient. So let me start by saying what is multi-party computation. So when today, nowadays, you go online and you play poker, what happens is that you are here with your friends and you go on an online server, you connect to some central servers that deals the cards for you and then gives you the card and then you can play poker. But of course, what happens if you're playing with pirates? What happens if the central server is controlled by a pirate and there is one of the players is also a pirate? Well, then they can easily collude together, right? And then the pirate controlling the server can give very good cards to his friend and bad cards to everyone else. So in multi-party computation is all the sets of the cryptographic techniques that allow you to, instead of having this central server, basically to split the trust in the servers among the players. So every player runs a piece of software on their machines that simulates the presence of this trust server. And we want to do this in a way that even if everyone else is a pirate, then you can still play poker fairly, because we don't want to lose money. So this is going to be a half technical talk, half not. I'm going to tell you something about the application of MPC and how they've been used in the real world. I'm going to define the security model because I'm a cryptographer, so I like security definitions. And then I'm going to present just two of the results that I think you should be aware of. One because it's very important, the other one is because I've done it, so I think you should know about it. So let's start from the beginning. So multi-party computation have been introduced almost 30 years ago by Andrew Yao. But you have to wait until at least the year 2000 to start seeing the first efficient solution that can be used in practice. So starting from 2000, you see a lot of prototypes and implementation of protocols for multi-party computation. And the application of MPC are various. So internet voting, electronic action, privacy preserving operation, secure signal processing. So basically, every time you want to compute on something and you care about the privacy of your inputs and the correctness of your result, you want to come and knock at the MPC door. So for instance, this is a story from a Danish newspaper. Danish people are insured, they have health insurance, and then when they get sick, they have bigger problem than money, right? They are sick, so they have to worry about their sickness, and they forget to go to the insurance and ask for their money. This is a problem because the sick people could enjoy this money and could help them to deal with their problem. And so an easy solution of this could be that hospitals and insurance company could perform an intersection of the databases once in a while to check who should get some money. Of course, this is a privacy sensitive kind of computation, because you don't want the medical records of a patient to be disclosed or their insurance data. And we can solve this problem using MPC. Another example was from Denmark. There is actually a paper. It's the first time that MPC has been used to move real money. So in this case, sugar beet farmers in Denmark, they have sugar beet contracts. So the European Union tells them how many sugar beets they can grow, how many sugar beets they can sell, and they can exchange these objects. These objects are like currency. And they wanted to determine the price for exchanging these kind of commodities. So you can do an auction, right? Everyone says, I want to buy at this price, I want to buy so much at this price, and then you can make this nice curve and find the equilibrium point. But the farmers didn't want to tell each other how much they were willing to buy and sell for, because that reveals information about their own farm. And Danish farmers are very technologically advanced, so they use MPC to determine this price. The computation lasts around 30 minutes, and that's, is that practical, is it not? Well, if it's a task that you have to do only once a year, maybe it's good. Unfortunately, that solution offers only a weak kind of security, so passive security, and it assumed the majority of the party to be honest. And that I don't like. Being grown in Italy, I don't believe that the majority of people are honest. So another example that I heard from last week is that there is also an Estonian group of people that more or less do the same. They have a nice website with a nice logo. And so ICT companies in Estonia, they wanted to benchmark against each other. They want to do how well they perform. How much do we pay our employees? How much revenue we get for money we spend? And they want to compare this information with each other. They want to extract statistics. Of course, this data should be kept private, so they're using MPC to do this. But also this solution, also ShareMind, only gives you this kind of weak security. So what is the security model? I keep saying security, but what do I mean when I say security? So first of all, what is computation? To me, computation is a circuit where we have, from now on, I'm only going to talk about two parties, but you can generalize to more. So we have Alice and you have Bob. They have some inputs. Let's say they're bits, right? We can do everything with bits. And they want to evaluate some circuit made of multiplication and addition on these bits. So this is computation for me. Secure computation means that all the inputs are kept private. That's why there is a little lock to show that these inputs are kept private. And also all the gates are encrypted, because also all these internal values should be kept private. Also, all the gates should be encrypted in the sense that they should produce the right output. They should be secure. All the gates should be secure. In particular, if Alice is corrupted, if she's a pirate, she shouldn't be able to do things like, oh, I want to learn this intermediate value, or maybe I want the output to be this bit that I decide. Clearly, those are problems in terms of privacy and correctness. So what do I mean when I say secure? This is kind of a cultural clash here, because I come from the cryptography world. Most of you come from the signal processing world. So intuitively, we all agree that a protocol is secure if no one can attack it, if no attacker can learn any information. But unfortunately, security is... how can you test all attacks? There isn't a list of attacks. There isn't a book that you can buy where you read all attacks, and then there isn't any such a thing. Maybe you make your system secure against 10 kind of attacks, and then tomorrow they come out with another kind of attack. And then what do you do? So in cryptography, we believe that security is not a property that can be checked empirically. So what we do, we want to prove security. So in particular, for the case of multi-party computation, the standard model for proving security is the ideal world, real world paradigm. So the top word here, what I call the ideal world, is what you want. So you have Alice and Bob. What you really like is to have a magical box where you can put your inputs and get an output. The magical box computes the function as it's supposed to do and never reveals the inputs, right? Unfortunately, there is no such magical box. And what you do, in fact, is you do some kind of cryptography protocol where parties exchange some encrypted messages, right? So clearly, the ideal world is secure by definition, right? There is no way of attacking the box. But in the real world, Alice could be a pirate and she could cheat in the protocol. And maybe, what does it mean that this information does not reveal anything about the inputs? The way to formalize this is to say that to create an ideal adversary, what we call a simulator, that lives in the ideal world. And the goal of the simulator is that by only seeing the input and the output of the computation, so by doing what is supposed to do in the ideal world, should be able to produce some kind of transcript of the protocol that looks the same as this one here. And then if you can prove that this transcript here and this transcript here are indistinguishable, then you say that your protocol is secure. But more formally, we say that if for every adversary there is a simulator in the ideal world such that the output of the adversary and the output of the simulator are indistinguishable, then we call our protocol secure. And intuitively, this means because the two worlds are indistinguishable and the ideal world is secure by definition, then also the real world is secure. So there are many kind of adversary that one can consider. In the paper, in the proceeding, there is much more than this, but I think the most important characterization is about the level of corruption that you allow. So you can consider passive adversaries that follow the protocol exactly as you tell them, but then try to decrypt what they get. Then you have active adversary that do whatever they want, and that's the one I'm most concerned with. And then there's somewhere in between. Also, the number of corruption is very important. So you can have an honest majority, and in this case, you can even get perfect security, information traffic security. And these protocols are really, really efficient. In the other case, you can consider dishonest majority, that, by the way, is the only meaningful definition if you look at the two-party case, right? If you are in two, and if two parties are both honest, then there is no need for cryptography. So I'm concerned with the dishonest majority. I think the battery here is dead. And it needs to use cryptographic primitives. So traditionally, it's much harder to deal with dishonest majority than with honest majority. OK. So that's our security model. Let's look at some of the techniques that we have. So I assume that you're all familiar with the concept of public key encryption. So a public key encryption is a system where you have a public key and a secret key. You have an encryption function that takes a message and puts it into a ciphertext. And you have a decryption function that, with the help of the secret key, can retrieve the message from the crypto system. And what you want is for the encryption to be meaningful. Okay, you want the decryption to be correct. So if you encrypt something and decrypt, you get the same. And also you want indistinguishability. Basically, this is a version that fits in one line. But basically, what I'm saying is that even if you only encrypt one bit, either 0 or 1, the adversary shouldn't be able to tell you give this encryption of a bit, either 0 or 1, you give it to the adversary, and you ask the adversary, what is this? Well, the adversary shouldn't be able to guess with much more than 1/2 probability. So his best strategy is to guess. So that's what we want from security. But now we want to compute on the data, right? So we would like to have some kind of way to compute on the data. So that's homomorphic encryption. So if you start from two ciphertexts, C1 and C2, C1 is an encryption of X1 and C2 is an encryption of X2, you would like to have some way of computing on the data. You could have an addition. You might want to do an addition. So you take the two ciphertexts, you combine them together in some way, and then you get the new ciphertext. And now you want the new ciphertext to be an encryption of the sum of the original plaintext. And this is important, that this addition function is not using the secret key. It's not decrypting, summing, and encrypting again. The addition function is combining the ciphertext in the encrypted domain to get a new ciphertext that encrypts the sum. In the same way, you can define a multiplication requirement. Okay. So is there anything like that? Can something like that exist? Yes, actually, even the good old El-Gamal scheme is homomorphic with respect to multiplication. And if you want additive scheme, you have Paliya scheme, you have Revel scheme. It took more time to get to this, but we have also them. And more recently, people started discovering some crypto system that are additively homomorphic. Then you can do one multiplication. So they allow you to compute a bit more. BGN crypto system is based on pairings, or GHV with lattices. And now, a couple of years ago, we had this huge breakthrough that is the fully homomorphic encryption scheme by Gentry. This is a beautiful thing. It allows you to compute on everything. So fully homomorphic encryption is beautiful. It allows you to compute everything, every function on your input. So I send you an encryption of some data, and then you can sum the data, multiply the data, you can compute any function. And when this result came out, it was clear that it seemed to be absolutely impractical, but actually, I don't think I have time, but this regular, the fully homomorphic encryption is based on lattices. So a lattice is just a grid of points. It's a discrete subgroup of a vectorial space. And you can have bases of this space. So you can have this small one or this long one. And the small one is a good one because it allows you to compute all the points. With the big one, it's harder to solve some problems. So one of the problems that is hard to solve in this lattice, if you only have a long base, is to find the closest vector problem. So if I give you this red point and I ask you which point is closest, you are not able to do that. And you can make an encryption out of this. So you take a lattice point X and you add an error vector E, and this is a good encryption. If you have a secret key, so if you have a good lattice base, you can recover the closest point and find the error. If you have only the public key, you cannot do that. And now you can, in this error vector, you can encode your bit. So you can define this error vector to be 2 times some random vector, and then you put your bit in one of the position of the vector, right? Now if you have 2 vectors of this form and you sum them together, well, the 2 lattice points are a new lattice point, the error sum together, and also this 2b coefficient comes there, and then basically we have an addition modulo 2. So this system is additively homomorphic. There is a problem that the error grows, so you can only do a limited amount of operation. You can't keep adding forever. And then the other thing to notice is that these vectors are not only vectors in a lattice, but you can also look at them as polynomials modulo some irreducible polynomial. And then you also have a multiplication operation that, more or less in the same way, it gives you that if you multiply two ciphertext, you get a multiplication also in the plain text. So as I told you, the error grows, so you can only do a limited number of operations. But fortunately, Gentry found this great way of using the homomorphic properties to actually decrypt a ciphertext, to decrypt homomorphically inside the ciphertext. So you can decrypt a ciphertext with a lot of error and get a new ciphertext with a small error. I'm not going to tell you more about this. Oh, good. And then you have that. So last week at Eurocrypt, they told us that actually this scheme they implemented it. And it doesn't take as long as we would have expected. So this is a reasonable level of security. And you can compute polynomial of degrees 200. and every multiplication costs 0.1 seconds. It's not as bad as we thought. Of course, if you want to do the fully homomorphic one, then it takes much more. And then every multiplication takes 3 minutes to do. It's a new technology, but it's there, and someone is actually writing code for that. So follow it. The other thing I want to talk to you about is two-party computation, so the more standard protocols. And I'm looking at two-party with active corruption, when one of the parties corrupted. So the first practical solution was from 2 years ago, and they could evaluate 30 gates a second. In a recent work of me with some of my co-authors, we brought that to 20,000 gates a second. 20,000 gates a second is more practical. So how do we do this? Very briefly, it's an OT-based protocol. And the oblivious transfer tradition are believed to be really expensive because they require public key technology. While symmetric cryptography is fast because it only uses symmetric cryptography. But as you know, there is also something called hybrid encryption, right? If you want to send, when you open an SSL connection, what you do is that you send an AES key using RSA because RSA is bad and AES is good. In the same way, we can do the same with the oblivious transfer. So we can do a little bit of real oblivious transfer using public key cryptography, and then you can extend them using only symmetric key operation. And therefore, oblivious transfer are cheap because they basically only involve, asymptotically, they only require symmetric key cryptography. And that's very efficient. So an oblivious transfer is an object of this way, where you have a sender with two messages, M0, M1, and Alice, a receiver, that chooses sigma and gets M sigma. Bob doesn't learn anything about sigma, and Alice doesn't learn the other message. This is the same as a very small computation. So an oblivious transfer is actually a one-bit computation. And you can combine them together to get bigger computation. What we did in this work was to find a way to preserve the security also when the party is corrupted, but I'm not going to tell you anything about that because he's looking bad at me. So I'm only going to tell you about, I want to conclude, and I want to leave space for questions. So the message of this talk is the following. Techniques for MPC are getting faster and faster, generic techniques for MPC. So don't be afraid of using, of writing your senior processing algorithm in as a circuit, because we can compute your circuits faster and faster. So 20,000 Boolean gates per second, that we can do now. Maybe in a few years we will be able to emulate 1 megahertz secure processor. It's going fast. And maybe still too slow for senior processing, but then that's what one of the challenge I think is the most interesting for senior processing, is that in cryptography, we want every bit to be protected because we care about the privacy of every bit. But in senior processing, you have a lot of data. Maybe not all of this need to be protected the same way. And therefore, it could be interesting to find some reasonable security model to actually model this fact that not all of the signals should be protected in the same way. Still, we can have some reasonable security definition to capture this problem. Thank you very much.
We have time for a couple of questions.
Yes?
Thank you very much for this very nice presentation. Fast, but really nice. I have a small question about your last remark conclusion, actually. We are dealing with signals, very small, tiny, but there are so many of them, like a pixel in an image. You said that maybe not every bit is really important. So, for example, if we want to implement a system using a Paillet crypto system, we always use a 1,000-bit key. So do you think that maybe if we use a 100-bit key, will it be okay? Or how can we evaluate this?
So
it's not for us to evaluate the security because we are application-oriented people, but you're a cryptographer. So what do you think about that?
So actually, using Paillet is going to be worse and worse because as you cannot use with Paillet you can do a multiplication with a lot of bits, right? You have this big modulo n that is maybe 1,000 bits. Then you can pack a lot of information inside one ciphertext, and then you can do operation with big on out of data at the same time. You say you only care about 100 bits, so you make the keys smaller. Of course, you cannot do that because otherwise the encryption is not secure anymore, right? So the problem there is that, and that's not going to be better when the time grows, because in 10 years from now, you're still going to be looking at maybe image of, maybe you still want to do computation on 30 bits. But in 10 years from now, Palier keys should be 8,000 bits. So this, your security requirements is growing while your computation is not growing. So the fact that now we can pack a lot of information in Palier and that's meaningful is kind of an artifact of the fact that, you know, right now it's more or less the same. But it's, Palier is not going to scale well in the future. So so I think that actually, you know, approaches where the security parameter and the, we should decouple the security parameter and the computation. So from one from one hand, you have the size of your computation. Maybe 32 bits is enough. From the other hand, you have the security parameter. It's growing fast. The two things should be decoupled, and that's, I think, what other approaches are doing, not Palier. Yes?
So will there be a day that you can explain us in layman terms what the gentry encryption actually does? Why does it work?
So actually, the paper I was talking about, it's called is a paper of Levy and Gentry from this year Eurocrypt. Actually, I had two slides that I borrowed from them, so I should thank them. This paper explains it's called Implementing Gentry Crypto System, and it's you can understand that. I think it's not too hard. So why it works? Why it's fully homomorphic? It's actually pretty easy. So it's basically really doing multiplication of polynomials. Why that's secure, that's another story. And then you have to understand lattice reduction. But actually, I think the signal processing community probably understands lattices better than many other communities, because you're used to lattices and decoding are solving the causes vector problem is not too far away from, you know, decoding problems. So I would recommend you to read that paper.
Just one very quick question from Gwen Ellen.
Hi. Just rebounding on the first question. Usually in signal processing, we are basically doing operation on samples that can be, let's say, encoded on 8 bits.
Yeah.
Pixel is encoded on 8 bits. Let's say I'm using your new crypto system. How many bits do I need to represent that sample now?
So in the scheme, in my work, for my work, basically every bit gets an expansion factor of 100 bits, let's say like that. So the security is every bit, for every bit, so there was a, so every bit is represented as one bit, and then you have a MAC, an information theoretic MAC. So an information theoretic MAC, 80 bits, 120 bits, so you have an expansion factor that is not horrible. Actually, the way this protocol works, we can take this offline, but it's even better than this. But yeah, you have a let's say 80 bits, 100 bits. But that's the minimal security.
Okay, so 1 bit become 100 bits.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. That's a huge overhead for us. Are there any kind of research in trying to regroup? For us, it would be regrouping samples together, but being able to do operation on parts of the bit, on segments of the bits within the encrypted form.
So you can do that, actually. It's not this work. It's another piece of work where I do arithmetic computation, where I have the MAC and where I work with numbers modulo P, where the numbers are maybe arithmetic computation of a number of 120 bits, for instance, and the MAC is the same size. In that case, you have an expansion factor of 2.
Okay, thank you.
But then you need to use homomorphic encryption, basically Palier, to... Yeah, we'll take it offline.
All right. Thank you, Claudio.